Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is the podcast for you. So, hey friends, welcome back to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And we just cut out all of the really good pre-shows. So I know you're sad about that, but one day I'm going to save it all up and make a behind the scenes reel. So you should totally be subscribed and given 5 stars. You'll miss that whenever it drops at some point when I have time for it. But today, in our quest to show you things and tell you things you've never heard of, seen of, or considered before in the real estate space, we've got Rod Clape with us today. Rod, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lee. I'm really looking forward to this. You are a ball of fire.
And I'm pretty sure I just said your name wrong after I practiced
it's it. It's okay. Did I pronounce yours right?
In Tennessee. Yeah, Lee's easy, but it looks hard, you know, because that's difficult. But Rod, tell our listeners, well, obviously you're using a virtual background, but you said it's your real house, which kind of makes me hate you a little bit. So tell them where you're located, what you do in and around the real estate space so they can get a flair for Rod.
Sure. So I'm in Sarasota, Florida, and I am a multifamily real estate investor. I host the largest commercial real estate podcast, I'm blessed to say, I think in the world now, called Lifetime Cashflow. And I teach people. I never planned to teach people. In fact, when I first started my podcast, I used to say, I'll never sell you anything. I just want to add value, which was the truth. But now I do sold out live events around the country. And I did actually up until May. I was scheduled to have 800 people in Orlando in May. And we all know what happened with that. So I went live stream and I put a video studio here in my compound. I love helping other people discover how exciting real estate is. And, you know, a little bit of background on me, if you'll humor me for a second. So I immigrated to this country when I was 6 years old, ended up in Denver, Colorado. We struggled growing up, really struggled. I mean, I got clothes from the Goodwill and the Salvation Army, and that's how I, you know, dressed myself through junior high school, where I could get a job and actually buy my own clothes. And my mom babysat kids so we'd have enough money. And with her babysitting money, when I was 14, she bought the house across the street from us for about $30,000. When I was 17, she told me she made $20,000 in her sleep. And I'm like, what? Screw real estate. I'm sorry, screw college. I'm getting into real estate. And so, you know, I went and got my broker's license. Actually, right when I turned 18, you could actually become a broker through education back then. They got smart. Now you need some experience. But I actually was a broker right when I turned 18. And my first year in real estate, I made about $8,000. My second year, maybe $10,000. But my third year, I made over $100,000 when I was 21 back in 1981, which was decent money. So what happened between year two and year three? I met a guy that taught me about mindset and psychology, that 80 to 90% of your success in anything is that. Fast forward to today, I've owned a couple thousand houses. I've rented long-term multiple apartment complexes. In 2006, my net worth went up $17 million while I slept. And you're thinking, oh man, he's really good. Yeah. Wow. And
except
I did
that
too.
You said 2006.
Yes, I did. That's right. You know what's coming. And so I thought I was a real estate god. You know, you do the math on that. It's $8,300 an hour if you're curious, but there's a punchline. And that was 2008. I lost $50 million in 2008. I lost everything. And so, you know, a lot of my messaging is around mindset, the mindset it took to have $50 million to lose in the first place, and then the mindset it took to get back to what I'm blessed to enjoy today. But anyway, long answer to your question. I just want to give your listeners a little background on me and where I'm coming from.
So I have questions. First of all, what's your country of origin? Where'd you come from?
The Netherlands. And my mom thought it'd be a great idea to send me to school in wooden shoes for show and tell. And I got my ass kicked almost on a daily basis.
But you could have kicked them back with wooden shoes, Rod. Come on, man. Mom was trying to teach you something. Kick back.
Exactly.
Okay. So the second thing I have to ask you is, when you first tried real estate, mm-hmm. obviously making 10 grand is not bad back at the turn of the 70s and 80s. We're coming into the Reagan era. Of course, the economy was wild. Interest rates were insane, but you still managed to make money. So I have to ask you, what happened between year two and three to take you from 10 grand to 100 grand?
Yeah, I met a guy that taught me about mindset and psychology. And yeah, by the way, I remember putting houses on credit cards at 18% interest because the numbers made sense. Back, you talk about interest rates, but I remember when 7% interest was like, oh my God, this is amazing interest rate, right? And we're at like 2.5 now. But anyway, so yeah, I met a guy that taught me about mindset and psychology. And when I do a live event, I just did a 2-day live stream boot camp 2 weeks ago. And the first thing we do is we do this goal setting workshop on steroids. And we literally just, you know, because to get what it is that you want, you have to be very clear what it is. And then you have to be very, very clear why you want it, because that's what's going to get you to push through fear and limiting beliefs and get you to take action. Or maybe you're comfortable and the comfort zone's a warm place, but nothing freaking grows there. Right. So, you know,
mold does, Rod. You forgot that mold grows in warm.
Mold does. Mold does. You know, so just stock up on bleach if you're comfortable. That's all I've got to say. Right.
Okay. So when we think about the comfortable places, that's where real estate investing often does this, because it's a very uncomfortable thing before you actually have been in the middle of it. I kind of look like it, like marriage. It looks good from the outside. You don't really know what you're getting into. You get in and you're like, this can be really great, or this can be really uncomfortable. It's always going to be one of the extremes. It's rarely in the middle. And so it's so fascinating that we get popular culture putting movies out about real estate investing. The Pacific Heights movie, y'all know Michael Keaton and the tall white dude. What's his name? Is that Jeff Goldblum or something from the 80s? Scared the shit out of people from investing in real estate because he had a bad tenant. So they see somebody else's story and stay away from it because they're uncomfortable about the risk. But we also know that once you pay attention and figure it out and get out of that comfort zone, the risk can be worthwhile. So
can
I'd
be.
Love for you to
it
tell
us. It almost always is.
Right. I mean, honestly, for real world about it. But Today's society doesn't like to be uncomfortable or risky. But that's a different discussion. We'll have to go deeper on that sometime, because resiliency is at an all-time low. We got to work on that as a society. But anyway, so you were telling me that your mom bought an investment property when you were young and you watched her learn how to invest. What would you say was the driving factor for mom to make that happen? Besides, you can't use she loved her kids. That's
she was an entrepreneur. Okay, she invested in the stock market and made money with her babysitting money. Okay, I mean, we used to have a house full of kids. I don't think it was legal because there were like 15, 20 at times. But, you know,
they can't go back as statute of limitations. Your mom
right. I think she's good. She's in an ALF now and she'd kick their asses anyway. But we ate expired food, drank, you know, powdered milk because she thought milk was healthy at the time. And I mean, we really struggled, but she held it together and she was a force to be reckoned with. I got my work ethic from her. But, you know, when I saw that and I saw that the power of real estate, I'm like, good Lord. And then I bought 500 houses in Denver, which I wish I still had now, because that market is insane.
We don't look in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. We don't drive looking in the rearview mirror. Thank you. You're right. Absolutely right. Real estate has been very good to me. I've got, you know, I've only been teaching for about 3 years, but my students are pushing, I think, 40,000 doors that they've purchased, and several have retired and making, you know, they're building cash flow. And it's just such, like, I can show you behind me, there's some of the hundreds of thank you cards I get in the mail.
Yeah, but
you can't even see them all, you know, people whose lives have been impacted by our work. And it's, I mean, I work Sundays because I freaking love this. So let me say this to you. If you don't love what you do, then find something else. Because if you love what you do, not only will you be passionate about it, but if you're passionate about it, you'll be able to inspire other people to either invest with you, partner with you, work with you. But it starts with that love. So if you're not loving real estate, even, you can't associate pleasure with it and learn to love it. And you absolutely can do that. But if that doesn't work, then for God's sakes, go do something else. Life is too freaking short.
All right. So, you know, I have to ask you a crazy story. The one I want to ask you about is your first investment property, but you probably have something
better because
you bought lots of tours. So tell us something that you encountered, you never expected to encounter, and then what the other side looked like.
I'll give you a couple of funny ones. Okay. Cause I do this thing where I tell my landlord tenant stories. So I had this house in Denver, 30th and Columbine in Denver. One morning I'm reading the Denver Post and there's a picture of my freaking house. And I had a partner in Chicago that we were partners on it. And what I did was I bought millions of dollars worth of houses where we did them 50-50. They put up the money. I did all the work. We split profits. Everybody was happy. This is back in my 20s. Well, anyway, there's a picture of my house. And the headline was Making Money the Old Fashioned Way. It was a 5-bedroom house. The guy said he was in the maid service. Well, yeah, maybe maid outfits. But there was a prostitute in every bedroom. And he turned it into a whorehouse. And I called my partner, Al, in Chicago and said, "Hey, Al, you own a whorehouse in Denver." Anyway, yeah. So that's one.
I like that. That's like parenting when there's a bad kid, that somebody else's bad kid. He owned this house. Not
yeah,
you,
yeah, yeah.
Partner.
Right. Right. Exactly. I deflected. Yeah. Of course, we got him out. He had a bad credit. So I had like a triple deposit on him and we got him out. And we didn't lose money, but it was hilarious. Now, I'll tell you another one. I had a house here in Florida. On a canal. Okay. There's a beautiful area, the canals that go right out to the ocean here. I first time I ever saw that was when I moved here to Sarasota, and you know, you could take a boat from your backyard to the ocean. I didn't even know that was possible, but I bought five houses in this particular subdivision, and one was at the end of a canal. And one morning it was on Boyle Terrace. I'm not going to give you the address because this gets listened to a lot, but
somebody might live over there. We're not talking about.
Yeah, no, I promise you somebody lives there. Yeah. But I get a call in the morning from Wink TV, the local TV station. It's like, "Is this Rod Cleef?" "Yes." "Do you own the house on so-and-so Boyle Terrace?" "Yes." "Have you seen the news this morning?" "No." Well, what had happened was they had brought in the DEA with the night vision goggles and the submachine guns. They had transported in the tonnage of cocaine to this house. And the guy, and I will tell you, the tenant had an 800 plus credit score. We usually didn't even go any further than that because that, you know, it's so good. You guys in this business all know that. And all brand new furniture in there. And I mean, that guy's, I'm sure, still rotting in jail. And I'm sure that my maintenance people who had to move all the stuff out, that's probably still in their homes. We of course threw him out and all that stuff. So those are a couple of funny stories from landlord tenant related stories.
I mean, I'm glad you threw that in because, you know, Florida man is a whole meme. And so you just gave us a Florida man tenant story. So we appreciate that because I like to use that hashtag a lot. But it is interesting that you pointed out briefly on that one that the credit score became the driving decision. Mm-hmm. But one thing that people forget about in tenant landlord situations is, as landlords, often your best tenants might not have perfect credit, but they're loyal as the day is long. They went through a bad divorce, it knocked them on their feet, and then they will do anything they can to stay put. So it's a wonderful indicator, but not the only one. I got to toss that in.
Yeah.
Your whorehouse, that was cash flow, Rod. I mean, he could have been on your Lifetime Cash Flow podcast, but with a different perspective.
Hey, it's a business model. Well, let me circle back to that. Those were Colombians in that house. And this was Pablo Escobar. Like, this was Pablo Escobar time. This was the Pablo Escobar time. If you don't remember that, but I mean, you're very young, so you probably weren't even born yet,
Nicely played.
Yeah, thank you. But they're like, "Hey, can we interview you on TV?" And I'm like, "Hell no." I got a vision of all these machine gun toting Colombians ending up at my house. Anyway, yeah.
So circle that back around to where you are today. So you went from owning, you know, a whorehouse in your 20s when you could fix it up to avoiding the Colombian drug lords. And now you educate people on how they can add doors to a portfolio. So how did you go from doing to educating?
Yeah,
not
that's
just
a great
because
question.
You love it, but the passion, but it's definitely a mind shift in how you conduct yourself.
Huge. So I started my podcast because I hate asking for money. And I wanted to share my story because in 2008, I had 800 houses that I was renting. I had multiple apartment complexes, and it was the houses that pulled me down. And I was only at a 30% loan to value. Okay. And what happened was I had, and I'll give you real quick because I know you're curious. I had 800 houses, 2 hours that way, 2 hours south of me, 2 hours north of me, and everywhere in between. And it was just logistically unmanageable. So let me explain why. So, well, also Florida has no state income tax. So the property taxes are higher, and I had properties in wind and flood zones. So I had insurance that was higher, and all that impacts cash flow. But what really killed me was if I had a maintenance issue at one of my apartment complexes, everything's the same, the plumbing, the HVAC, the appliances, the locks, everything's the same. So you can stockpile parts and I could send a maintenance guy in and out in an hour. Well, if I had to send them an hour away to a house, they'd have to go see what was wrong. Every house is different. Find a Home Depot or a Lowe's. That could be an hour round trip. And I don't know if you've ever fixed anything. I'm sure you haven't, but you ask your husband this, invariably you end up going back again to Home Depot or Lowe's to get more parts. Well, so what took an hour at one of my apartment complexes took all day at one of my 800 C-class houses. And C-class properties have a lot more maintenance than the higher end ones. And that just killed me. But the coup de grace was most of my residents were contractors, plumbers, electricians, drywallers, painters, roofers, and that fell off a freaking cliff in 08 and 09. So that's why it crashed and burned. You know, I started my podcast like 3.5 years ago, And we hit 1 million downloads. And I used to tell people, like I said, I'll never sell you anything. And I'm a freaking liar, but I hit 1 million downloads. I'm like, shit, I better do something with this. So I wrote a book. I gave away 20,000 copies. And then my team's like, hey, why don't we actually make some money? So I did an online course. And now every event I've ever done is sold out. And I love it. I freaking love it. I mean, you know, it's funny. It took me to 3 years ago to find my absolute love, which is educating and helping people, you know, see the incredible opportunities. And there are opportunities, lots of things besides real estate, but that's the one I picked.
Well, you know what's funny? So when we're looking at business school and what people learn in their educational lives, there's a phrase often used, economies of scale, but it tends to refer to goods. You're talking about economies of scale as regards time, which is often something people leave out of the equation because they fail to value their time properly. So once you learn how to value time, you drove up your return on investment. But it's the same thing with what you're doing with education, because you could have educated one-on-one in individual coaching or working with an investor here and there and have five cards behind you on the wall. Instead, you're using the podcast and the classes to do time-wise economies of scale, which I think is fantastic. And it's something most people never figure out in life because they're so afraid of being exposed to people who might disagree with them. Because I'm going to guess you've had some negative comments in your classes and on your podcast from people who disagree with you and think you're a moron. What do you do with negative things when you live in a productive mindset?
Well, my wife thinks I'm a moron, but beyond that, I don't get too
She's
many.
She's legally
haters.
Required to say that, though.
Yeah, I don't get too many haters, and I've never had a complaint, knock on wood, believe it or not. I did a YouTube video that's my highest watched ever, and you'll know why in a second, which was the coming real estate crash of 2021, because I believe we're headed for a crash. And I got a lot of hate for that one, but it's been watched almost 100,000 times now, I think. I got hate for that. But, you know, most of my content is pretty motivational. So people don't remember what you said, but they remember how you made them feel. And I try to make them feel. Sometimes I get sucked in, but I don't respond. My wife's very calming, beautiful soul. And she's like, no, just delete. Delete and block. And, you know, I'm sure you get it too. I mean, there's just trolls. And the fact of the matter is none of them have more than the person they're attacking ever. You know, they're either broken or sad or depressed or feel inadequate, and they have to lash out, and they're keyboard warriors. And it's just sad, especially when you see it, you know, in adolescent children and at school, and you hear about the horrible things that happen when these kids get attacked in school. I do get it. It's, you know, in some of my ads, sometimes I'll be like, oh, it's, you know, scammer. And they don't freaking know who I am. They just want to, you know, attack. And I'm like, give me, you know, get a life. Right.
Well, my friend Justin told me a long time ago, and it's what I remember before I get tempted to dive into a comment thread, because you really should always, friends, stay out of comments. But Justin says, don't feed the trolls. And so if you respond to what they said, you're feeding them, and that keeps them around. And that's not what you really want to do in life. So I know we're rounding or at the end of my episode, because y'all know I keep them short, but this one's longer because we had 1,000 angles to go in. I'm really curious about why you see some challenges coming in the market. One of my local colleagues is very bearish on the market for 21 when it comes to multifamily. Of course, commercial, we can all see that commercial is about to face an opportunity, right, to grow, shift, and change because the work environments are all changing. Thank you, COVID. But what do you see in the multifamily space that could cause some hiccups in the market? I don't necessarily say I'm bearish because people always have to have somewhere to live, but what might cause a hiccup?
The big problem is these freaking eviction moratoriums, and you know they're not doing anything for landlords. I mean, forget it. If you're in New York, for example, in any of the blue states, that you know they're strangling free enterprise. But let's not go political. But the point is, you know,
I'll go down that rabbit hole with you. Why do you think there is no regard for the fact that most investors are mom and pops who have retirement income stream off their investments? Nobody seems to hear that being said. And it's being yelled from the rooftop.
You really want to go there, huh?
Okay. I am
so astounded at what's happening out there right now. The fake news is like crazy. And then, you know, things like as we're recording right now, this whole thing has come out with the graft and the bribery and all of that. And it's nowhere except Fox. It's just the craziest thing I've ever seen. It's like people, you know, you've got the potential of truly a criminal. criminal family going into the White House. And I'm probably going to regret saying that publicly, but the point is, it's the truth. And all you've got to do is research it. But, you know, it's really sad what's happening out there right now as it relates to real estate owners. And of course, retail is getting killed. I mean, I've got friends that, and the number I'm hearing is 70% of their tenants are in trouble. I went to Lincoln Road in South Beach, Florida here, and 30 to 40% of the businesses are gone forever. The restaurants, iconic restaurants, gone forever. I mean, it's a crime what's happening.
You're in Florida, which Florida opened up sooner than a lot of areas. It's very uneven what's going on out there. Yeah. But Amazon's up over 100%, but the small retailers are vanishing. Home Depot and Lowe's through the roof. Small local shops weren't allowed to open. It's bizarre.
No, it's the most ridiculous thing ever. And it's ludicrous. Like, I mean, you know, the social distancing. Yeah. Okay. Social distance that, like, we just went on a flight to Dallas. We're buying 159 unit. I bought 1500 doors in the last 18 months with my students. So, I mean, I'm back and we're buying and everything's great, but they tell us, you know, social distance onto the plane, but then you're packed in on the plane. I'm like, well, what are you thinking? I mean, come on, or put your mask on to walk to your table in the restaurant, but you can take it off when you get there. It's like, come on, what is this stupidity? But anyway, so you know, as far as real estate, retail's getting crushed, offices getting crushed, multifamily, people need a place to live. So, you know, it's going to do better. But to think that we have 25 million unemployed and have it, and all these businesses go out of business and not have it impact the economy, I think is a little naive, honestly. So I do think we're going to have a hit. Is it going to be as bad as 08? I hope not. But, you know, I've interviewed an economist on my show. I've listened to other pretty well-known economists, and they're all calling for it. I mean, they really are. COVID was just like a catalyst for it. You know, real estate goes in cycles. I'll tell you real quick. I know we're running low on time, but I went through it in the 80s in Denver. I bought a house for 56, flipped it for 76, made nice 20 grand. Market crashed, bought the same house I sold for 76 back for 18. A few years later, sold it for 160. It is now worth 800.
That's exhausting.
I know. I mean, but that's, yeah, no, that's what's happened. It happens in California. You know, I thought Florida, you know, 80 million baby boomers getting old and cold, that Florida would be recession proof. Well, it was ground zero for the recession. But anyway, you know, I love this business. There's opportunity in a down cycle, in an up cycle. If there is a crisis, you know, if you're a real estate broker, I would encourage you, you know, every January 1st, you go back to work. If you're an agent or a broker, I would highly encourage you. You are in the perfect place to capitalize on investment opportunities and build cash flow. And if you want to come see me, just text multifamily to 41411. I do these 2-day boot camps. They're $100. I don't sell anything, and they're 16 hours of training. And I would love to help you explore this. So,
what are we texting? Yeah. Multifamily.
Multifamily to 41411, or you could text Rod to 41411, and that'll get you into my ecosystem. But you really want to get out there and build an annuity, so you're not working all the time. Oh, thank you. So you're not working all the time, you know, so that you can start building cash flow, because you're in the perfect place to do it. And I know you get a lot of those people that listen to you, Lee. And so I couldn't go by without saying that again. My events are $97 if you get them right away. Tickets early, and I don't sell anything, and it's 16-18 hours of suffering through me, but I've never had a complaint. I've never had a complaint about that either, except that my breaks are too short.
That's okay. You can pee faster. So all y'all got to do is, if you want more information on multifamily, on buying more doors, on how to thrive and adapt when markets change, because one thing you'll know about real estate is that investors buy in all market conditions. They learn how to adapt. It's about adaptation, not pivoting.
Right.
So,
Rod,
thank you for coming on the show and giving us about 1,000 different directions. Guys, if you forgot to text or you didn't write down the code because you don't write as quickly as you listen, don't worry. Everything's in the show notes for this episode. So you can reach out, and maybe one day you'll be sending Rod a thank you note and you can land on his wall too. So that'd be your lucky day. Rod, I really appreciate you, and I look forward to connecting more in the future.
Me too, Lee. Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
All right, guys, subscribe for more 5 stars, and we'll see you next time.
If you are listening to this episode and you need to tell us something about your crazy life in or around real estate, then tweet me at Lee Brown or reach me on any of the social networks. That's if you're a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular normal human being who happens to have dealt in real estate. Subscribe for more episodes. And as always, we are thrilled that you joined us for some crazy shit in real estate. See you next time.